goals. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this episode, we're going to take a look at a possible new face on Mars. Missing parts of the Sphinx have been found in a German cave, a zombie-proof house, the monkey witch that talked to people, and a white buffalo was born in Texas, and Native Americans are saying that it's a sign of the end of days. That and a lot more in this 59th episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome back, everybody. I really appreciate you, your support, your staying with the show after this month-long time off. There's just been a lot of really crazy things that have gone along and happened in my life over the past month or so that has caused me to not be able to get the show out. I finally got a new cord for the microphone, but I'm not sure that that's the problem because there seems to be a few times where the mic's cutting out still. So I'm not sure if it's the mic, I'm not sure if it's my USB port, I'm not sure what it is really. So just bear with me if you happen to see some places in here that get cut out. It's frustrating for me to say the least, just simply because I want to be able to get the show out, but man, life is just crazy and hectic these days. It really is. So anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know that the show's going to come out hopefully every 2 weeks. I'm going to try and get it out whenever I can. I know that I've been saying that I wanted to do some new things with the show. I don't know if I'm going to be... Things have changed in my life, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to really do a whole lot of interviews or anything along those lines. I want to. I just don't think it's going to happen. We'll just have to see. Whatever comes about, comes about. You know, however the show goes is however it goes for whatever time I have and then whatever I can do for the show. Anyway, I'll explain later some of the things that have gone on, but for now, let's go ahead and get into this show. The first thing that I wanted to take a look at, actually, before we even get into all that, this episode, there is so much stuff. I have a list of links here of stuff that I have looked up over the past month since the last show, and it's way more than I could possibly ever fit into one show. I'd say there's 60 links here. But there's a lot of links here, and I want to be able to give you guys these links to look at them, even though I'm not going to be able to talk about them in the show. I mean, there's a lot of really crazy stuff going on outside of the stuff that we're going to talk about in this. There's been some cases of spontaneous human combustion, some monsters that have been striking in South America. The NSA has a PDF, a journal, for you to be able to go and see what's going on with some military trainees that have been abducted. They've also got a PDF on translating ET messages. There's some links in there for you to be able to buy, literally purchase, land on the moon. We're going to look at some articles that are just absolutely crazy today, but there's still so much other stuff that I'm not going to be able to get to. A man beheaded his girlfriend in front of her friends. A bizarre power saw murder. An empty house calls 911. A 25,000-year-old cave painting in Spain has been found. A new X on Mercury is really what they're calling the new face on Mars. It's a big X on Mercury that is kind of strange. It doesn't look like a natural phenomenon, but anyway, there's a lot there. The old leather man, six bizarre ways architecture can help ward off ghosts, the oldest statue in the Western Hemisphere, strangest planets in our sky, and that's just not even a tenth of what's there. I want you guys to go check out the 13skulls.com and get a chance whenever you have it to go and check out all of these links. There, like I said, is a lot of crazy stuff has been happening in the last couple of weeks, and I want you guys to go and take a look at them. So let's go ahead and take a look at the first article, which is courtesy of beforeitsnews.com. Apparently, a new face has been discovered on Mars. Its latitude and longitude are here in the article if you wanted to go take a look at it for yourself. It's confirmed in at least Google Maps as far as Mars is concerned. 46-year-old Linneo says he is passionate about the riddles of Mars, and he is from the Puglia region and town of Cerignola. Liano says he discovered the new face on Mars by examining pictures sent back to Earth from an ESA probe orbiting Mars and worked it into Google's map of Mars. He presents the photos here in this article and is unsure if the photos are optical illusions or a real sculptured face, but he feels that the images will nevertheless cause a sensation around the world. Now, I want you guys to go and take a look at these photos. It does look like a human head from the neck up. There does appear to be a brow, a nose, a mouth, a chin, ear, and a neck on this head. You can go and take a look at there's a picture of the guy there that actually found this, but you can see where this could possibly be a natural phenomenon. But it does look like a real human head on Mars. I'm going to have to go and take a look at this in Google Maps just to see if I can actually see this for myself. But I want you guys to go and take a look at it. It's really interesting. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of archaeologydaily.com. Archaeologists have discovered fragments of one of the world's oldest sculptures, a lion-faced figurine estimated to be 32,000 years old from the dirt floor of a cave in southern Germany. The ivory figure, along with tiny figurines known as the Venus of Hohle Fels, marks the foundation of human artistry. The Aurignacians appear to have been the first modern humans with handicrafts, social customs, and beliefs. The lion-made sculpture gradually reassembled in workshops over decades after the fragments were discovered in 1939 is a kind of reverse sphinx, a human body standing erect but with the head of a now extinct European cave lion. The head is finely cut, but there is not enough detail left in the body to judge whether the chimera was meant to be male or female. Klaus Joachim Kind, the chief archaeologist at the Paleolithic site near the city of Ulm, said the figure was probably used by a shamanistic religion. The fact that the figurine was found with many tools close to its sediment does not suggest the site, the Stadel Cave, had a religious significance for its owners at the time. The first fragments were found in 1939 by Robert Wetzel in sediment, but not recognized until 30 years later. Replicas of the Lion Man are on display in major museums in Tokyo, Paris, and New York. The original is in the Ulm Museum. It's interesting, they didn't show a picture of it here, I really wish they would have, but it's interesting to see something that looks like the Sphinx to be found in a German cave. Now, this next thing that I wanted to take a look at is a really cool house that I personally would live in if I had the money to buy it. It is a zombie-proof house. This article is courtesy of designboom.com, and it's located on the outskirts of Warsaw in Poland. It's a safe house by architectural office KWK Proms. It's a two-story residential house that aims to provide a feeling of maximum security for the residents. It really, really does, because if you were to live in this house and you were to close it down and lock it down, no one would ever get inside. But at the same time, you might not get out if you close it down and something goes wrong. The most distinguishable element of the design is the movable exterior wall components that allow the house to be completely closed to its environment or open and connected to the rural landscape. While the initial read of the design might seem confining, the house, when it's in its open state, offers immense transparency while establishing a strong relationship to the site. Now, the building itself looks like a big cube when it's closed down. But when it's opened up, it has big windows, it has a really large side that opens up, a lot of glass on the side of it, a lot of open air that you can see. It actually has a drawbridge that leads to the house from the street. There are huge, these doors, these walls look to be somewhere in the area of about, if I was to make a guess, I would say somewhere in the area of about 1.5 to 2 feet thick. There is a big area that you can go and walk out, like a big deck. And I apologize, the drawbridge doesn't lead to the outside, to the road. It leads from the outside to a big deck that you can go walk on. And there's a cat sitting there. This is a really, really cool house, a really nice house too. It looks very well lit during the nighttime when you turn all the lights on. It's open, but when you close it, you really could be safe from any type of threat at all. This house, being that it is configured with walls that are about 1.5 feet thick, I would think that it might be even, be able to be considered a bunker of some kind, as far as if World War III happens and, there's bombs going off everywhere, it might actually save you in that type of situation too. It's just an interesting house and I would love to live there. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of timeslive.co.za. A monkey has been burnt by a mob after being accused of being a witch. A velvet monkey was burned to death in Kagiso informal settlement west of Johannesburg in Africa after residents believed it was linked to witchcraft. In an incident described as barbaric by the community-led animal welfare, residents chanted, "Kill that witch." It reported that the monkey wandered into the settlement last Monday on May 23rd, which I think was further away than just last Monday, but was pelted with stones, shot at by police, and then burned to death. The monkey fled the mob and temporarily found shelter in a tree, but was pulled out, put in a bucket, and doused in petrol. Someone struck a match, the monkey got out of the bucket and dropped down dead. They continued throwing stones at it, said Kagiso resident Tobago Moswetsi, who was there during the mobbing. Moswetsi was woken up by his friends and told that the monkey was going around talking to people. He said he joined in the case as he was curious. He was the resident that climbed the tree and brought the monkey down. "I feel guilty. I shouldn't have taken it down from that tree. I dropped it down after someone poured petrol on it. I had no choice." Cora Bailey, who is manager of the Animal Welfare Center, said that the animal fell victim to superstition, especially because they did not understand that such animals wander into townships because their natural habitat was destroyed. Warrant Officer Solomon Sabia could not confirm that the police shot at the animal. It's an interesting case. Now, the monkey was supposedly going around and talking to people. Now, animals go around, and, when animals make noises, they're speaking their own language. What happened? Was someone on some kind of drug that made them believe that the monkey was talking to them, or what? What was going on with that? Did the monkey actually talk to someone? It doesn't say what the monkey was saying. It merely just says that the monkey was talking. Either way, it's a crazy story. Now, we're going to go ahead and move on to something else that I thought was rather interesting. Apparently, here in Texas, there has been the birth of a white buffalo, not a albino buffalo. Not one. Now, an albino has a red nose, red eyes, or at least a pink nose and pinkish-looking eyes. This buffalo is white, has a black nose, black eyes, a black-tipped tail, and Native Americans say that it's a sign of the end of times. Now, in Native American lore and many sacred tribes, that's what this buffalo stands for. R.B. Little Soldier said the remarkable animal was born on his ranch near Greenville, about an hour northeast of Dallas, in the middle of a thunderstorm on May 12th. White buffalo are extremely rare, said to be 1 in 10 million births. They're considered to be sacred. Little Soldier would like the name of the little calf to be called Lightning Medicine Cloud, but he must wait until tribal leaders from around the country gather at his ranch to determine what prophecy the animal brings. The rancher grew up on a reservation in North Dakota and said that his grandfather was son of legendary Chief Sitting Bull. He and his wife now maintain a herd of about 1,600 bison in North Dakota. The Little Soldiers believe that the last true sacred white buffalo, a female named Miracle, was born in 1994. Now, one of the significances of this buffalo, is there one at all, or is it just a natural deformality or a natural formation of this animal? Either way, there's three or four videos that you can go and see of this guy, of the Little Soldier guy, the Native American Indian. You can go and see what this guy's talking about. You can actually go and see the buffalo itself. Either way, there's a lot of stuff saying in the news these days that we're headed towards some kind of a change or some kind of a major catastrophe. Is this white buffalo a sign of the apocalypse? All right, well, the next thing I wanted to take a look at was a very interesting photo and a little bit of a description of what happened. It's courtesy of Examiner.com. I know a lot of you don't like Examiner, and sometimes they do have pretty crappy articles, but this one I thought was rather interesting because it actually came with pictures. A California witness reports noticing a cloud with ripples where a bump suddenly formed, and this thing started to lower down out of the cloud, according to a May 6, 2011 testimony from MUFON. The witness immediately grabbed a camera and took three images. The thing in the cloud looked as if it lowered itself down out of the cloud to release some type of gas or something else out of the end of whatever it was that was in the cloud. The witness stated it then slowly went back up into the cloud the same way it showed up. I showed the pictures to a friend and they told me to give the pictures to the right people. The witness offers three images, of which you can go and take a look at. Now, one of the images is, well, the images themselves, you can go and take a look at them. They're rather odd. It does look as if something came down out of the clouds, simply just for the fact that you can see the cloud line. You can see where the average cloud is in the picture. You can see a street light off to the right. You can see some trees off to the left, which look like palm trees. You can see that nothing else in the sky looks like this cloud, but it comes down straight, almost like a pillar out of the cloud. It gets a little bit bigger near the base and it kind of feathers off to the left a little bit, and it looks like it might actually have a little bit of a shadow there too. But either way, I want you guys to go and take a look at these because they are rather good images. They are good, clear pictures. What it is it some kind of a natural formation? I don't know. Is it some kind of a UFO that had come down out of the clouds? I really couldn't tell you. I wish I could, simply just because this is a very fascinating picture for me. But either way, like I said, I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think of the pictures of the something that lowered itself down out of the clouds. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of science.nasa.gov. I found this interesting because I love space. I love deep space and the search for stuff that's out there, the search for anything that's out there. The Voyager space probe is set to enter interstellar space. More than 30 years after it left Earth, NASA's twin Voyager probes are now at the edge of the solar system. Not only that, they're still working. And with each passing day, they are beaming back a message that, to scientists, is both unsettling and thrilling. The message is, expect the unexpected. It's uncanny, said Ed Stone of Caltech, Voyager Project Scientist, 1972. Voyager 1 and 2 have a knack for making discoveries. Today, which actually was April 28th, so well over a month and a half ago, or at least about a month and a half ago, NASA held a live briefing to reflect on what the Voyager mission had accomplished. Now, there's a video there you can watch of Voyager and its journey to the edge of the solar system. It's really fascinating for me because I want to see what it is that these probes have a view of. I want them to take some pictures, something, and send it back, because nothing man-made, as far as I know. Now, you go into some of these things that people have said that they've traveled interstellar to another planet, that they've had all these experiences. I don't know. But personally, I don't think that man's ever had anything. Well, maybe they have. I don't know really what to think about man having had something go outside of the solar system. And if this is the first thing that man has had go outside of the solar system, I want to see what images it will send back. The probes, to me, are really fascinating simply because they actually have a golden record inside of one of them that has all the sounds of Earth and, you know, whales and things like that, that people are going to be, that anyone or anything that finds this that could actually interpret it and play it could listen to and see. For me, it's fascinating. So anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next thing that I want to take a look at, which of course is Broken. Okay, well, apparently I have lost a couple of my links here to the stuff that I wanted to show you guys. Okay, well, that's not it. So, all right, well, seeing as how the links here aren't working for some reason, I'm going to go back and check them out real quick. We're going to go ahead and take a little bit of a break, and we're also going to listen to a great new episode of Anomalous. It's going to be the second half of the presidential UFO sightings. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
Now, we found out that makes people happy. It makes them intoxicated.
Welcome to Anomalous.
That's a lie.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Anomalous and part 2 of Presidential UFO Encounters. When I recorded the last episode, the original intent of the show was just to cover the Ronald Reagan piece, and then I came across the Jimmy Carter piece, and I said, wow, this is pretty cool, so I threw that in there as well. But as I was researching for that episode to get the facts proper and all that stuff, I kept coming across the story of President Eisenhower apparently having a secret meeting with extraterrestrials, and it was a really cool story, but I just couldn't fit it into that show. Well, as I was doing the research on the Eisenhower story, I kept coming across facts about President Bill Clinton being very infatuated with Area 51 and Roswell and so forth. So I'm going to throw those two together in this episode. So let's just jump right on into it. Information for the Eisenhower portion of this show comes from the website www.presidentialufo.com. How ironic. It's coming from a letter, or an article, I should say, written by William L. Moore that appeared in the Hollywood, California Gazette, March 29th, 1989. One of the first conclusions an impartial observer must make about the subject of UFOs is that the rumors and circumstances play far too great a role in what ought to be a more exacting quest of knowledge. It is just such an observation which once led Dr. Carl Sagan to comment dryly that UFOs are more a matter for religion and superstition than they are for science. While this dismissal is perhaps unscientific in its own right, the point is well taken. Attend any gathering of UFO people you want and simply listen. Rumors abound. Perhaps worse, however, is that some of these rumors manage to circulate for years, even decades, without anyone making any reasonable effort to get to the bottom of them. One of the most persistent of these is a story that President Eisenhower visited Edwards Air Force Base in early 1954 and either viewed the bodies of dead aliens and the wreckage of the craft, or met with live aliens in some sort of diplomatic mission to Earth. The story takes many forms, with a common thread being that Ike mysteriously disappeared one evening while on vacation to Palm Springs, and that he was spirited to Edwards to view or meet aliens. It is said that he returned by dawn and shortly thereafter ordered absolute secrecy about anything having to do with UFOs. No doubt one of the reasons that this particular rumor has continued to circulate for such a long time is that there are a number of verifiable facts associated with it. Some of them are rather curious. For example, President Eisenhower did indeed make a trip to Palm Springs between February 17th and 24th, 1954, and on the evening of February 20th, he did disappear. When members of the press learned that the president was not where he should be, rumors ran rampant that he had either died or was seriously ill. The story even managed to get into a press wire before being killed moments later. To quell the fuss, White House Press Secretary James Hagerty called an urgent late-evening press conference to announce solemnly that the president had been enjoying fried chicken earlier that evening, and had knocked off a cap from a tooth and had been taken to a local dentist for treatment. When Ike turned up as scheduled the next morning for an early church service, the matter seemed ended. Although the Palm Springs trip was billed as a vacation for the president, the trip appears to have come up rather suddenly. In addition, it is a matter of record that Ike returned from a quail shooting vacation in Georgia less than a week before leaving for Palm Springs. While the incident of a local dentist being called upon to treat the President of the United States is usually enough that it should constitute a rather memorable event for those involved, the dentist's widow, in 1979 interview, was curiously unable to recall any specifics relating to her husband's alleged involvement in the affair, not even the time of day it occurred. Yet her memory appeared flawless when asked to relate details of her and her husband's attendance by presidential invitation at a steak fry the following evening, where her husband was introduced as the dentist who had treated the president. This would appear to suggest a cover story, the details of which could easily have been repeated at the time, but quite naturally forgotten 25 years later. Research at the Eisenhower Library has uncovered two other facts inconsistent with the dentist story. The first is that while the library maintains an extensive index of records relating to the president's health, there is no record of any dental work having been performed at all during February of 1954. A file in Dentist contains nothing concerning any such incident either. Secondly, there is a large file containing copies of all sorts of acknowledgments which were sent by the White House to people who had something to do with the Palm Springs trip. There are letters, for example, to people who sent flowers, people who met at the airplane, people who had offered to play golf, etc. There is even a thank you letter to the minister who presided over the Sunday service Ike attended. Yet there is no record of any acknowledgement having been sent to the dentist who treated the president. If the matter were as routine as Haggerty attempts to make it appear, then the absence of these records seems strangely inconsistent. The rumor of the president's alleged visit to Edwards is not a new one. UFO contactee fringe writers began making unsupported claims about it less than 2 months after Ike's trip. So did a bizarre fellow from the Hollywood Hills named Gerald Light, who, in April 16, 1954 letter to the head of the Southern California Metaphysical Organization, actually claimed to have been at Edwards where he saw Ike, the saucers, and the aliens. Light's letter has been controversial for years, and copies of it have turned up in all sorts of places, including the National Enquirer. Investigation into Mr. Light's background, however, turned up the fact that he was an elderly mystic who believed that the psychic out-of-body experiences were a logical extension of the reality of life and should be treated as such. In the final analysis, Light's alleged visit to Edwards was just such an experience. And so ends the story. Clearly something unusual occurred involving the president on the evening of February 20, 1954. Whether it was a trip to the dentist, a trip to see flying saucers, or something altogether different and unrelated, no one can say. It's the stuff rumors are made of.
Humans, for the most part, don't have a clue. They don't want one or need one either. They're happy. They think they have a good bead on things.
Well, why the big secret? People are smart. They can handle it.
A person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it. 1,500 years ago, everybody knew the Earth was the center of the universe. 500 years ago, everybody knew the Earth was flat. And 15 minutes ago, you knew that people were alone on this planet.
Imagine what you'll know tomorrow.
Okay, wow, we are already running over in time. Try as I might to keep these episodes short, sweet, and to the point, sometimes it's just not that easy because there's so much information out there, and I fully understand what TJ goes through to try to bring you guys a good show. The next thing I'm going to go over is going to be about President Bill Clinton. While President Bill Clinton was in office, he was very much interested in UFOs, the JFK assassination, Roswell, all of the wonderful secrets that the government is hiding from us because we are just not ready to know these things. When he went into office, he assigned Webster Hubbell, the Associate Attorney General in the Justice Department, science advisor John Gibbons, who started an investigation by the United States Air Force, and CIA Director James Woolsey, I believe it's pronounced, W-O-O-L-S-E-Y, I think it's Woolsey, that's what it is, I'm sorry, to launch a CIA investigation, and all of them were to report to President Clinton if they found anything. But no UFO information was ever made public, no answers were ever given, and Clinton never held a press conference to announce what really happened in Roswell or anywhere else. But he did make this nice little speech, and I thought it was pretty entertaining. I have to apologize, some of the audio quality gets a little rough. I've tried to clean it up. It's not as ear-splitting or piercing as it was before. So let's play that, and I don't know, you judge your own opinions.
I've always wanted to ask this question, and I was wondering from president to president whether you pass a list along of secrets that only you and a couple of President Bush Sr., President Bush, Jimmy Carter, or what really happened at Roswell. So without giving away any state secrets, is there something we can all look forward to in the future to read about that you know that we don't know that will really make the National Enquirer required reading?
I don't know if you all remember this, but there was actually, when I was president in my second term, there was an anniversary observance of Roswell. You remember that? People came to Roswell, New Mexico from all over the world. And there's also a site in Nevada where people were convinced that the government had buried a UFO and perhaps an alien deep underground because we wouldn't allow anybody to go there. I could say now, because it's now been released into the public domain, I had so many people in my own administration were convinced that Roswell was a fraud, but this place in Nevada was really serious. There was an alien artifact there. So I actually sent somebody there to figure it out. And it was actually just a secret defense installation, alas, and doing boring work that we just didn't want anybody else to see. So I can't think of that. But I don't know the answers. Which is one reason I would like to live to be 100, just to see what happens.
So that means there's a list or no list?
What? What'd you say?
I was just joking.
You should have said, I don't know what you said, but you should have said there's absolutely no risk of that. Given my misspent youth, I'm lucky to be here now.
What I did say was that there really is no list, or there is a list, the secrets.
If there is one, I don't know it. I mean, I really, the Roswell thing, I think, really was an illusion. I don't think it happened. I mean, I think there are rational explanations that I have succeeded, and I did attempt to find out if there were any secret government documents that reveal things, and if there were, they were concealed from me, too. I wouldn't be the first president that underlings have lied to or that career bureaucrats have waited out. But there may be some career person sitting around somewhere hiding these dark secrets, even from elected presidents. But if so, they successfully eluded me. And I'm almost embarrassed to tell you I did try to find out. I do believe, by the way, I'll be just one more.
Well, I think that's going to be it for this episode. I'm going to shove a fork in it and call it done. I can honestly go on for a while longer about all the cool stuff that I found, and I think I'm going to be touching again on the subject of UFOs in some kind of a neat and cool way again fairly soon. But until then, this is Rogan. You've been listening to Anomalous, and peace out from the D.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks again, Rogan. Sorry it took me so long to play that second half of the presidential UFO sightings, but, you know, I lost it there for a minute. You had to give it back to me, and I'm finally getting to it. But thank you, Rogan. I really do appreciate it, man. Some really good stuff. Rogan's got some stuff in the works, too. I think he's got something you guys are going to be liking that's going to be coming up soon. I'll let you guys know more about it, but anyway, you know, like I said, there's been so much stuff that's been going on lately in the world of the paranormal, world of the strange, and simply just the world that we live in, which is in itself paranormal and strange. There's so much stuff, like I said, that I'm not going to be able to talk about at all. I'm not going to be able to get to it. There's so much stuff here. I mean, like I said, if I could cover it all, I would, but the show's going to be like 3 hours, 4 hours long if I did. I wouldn't be able to take enough time. It'd take me 3 or 4 days just to edit it all down. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start putting a time limit on the shows. We're going to look at maybe roughly about an hour, maybe a little bit over than that. That way it can be a little bit easier for me to be able to get the show out. So we're going to limit it down to a little bit less than, you know, about an hour or so. You know, it just depends. You know, it depends on how much time I personally have. I don't have a whole lot of time as it is to do anything because it seems like everything comes around. But you guys know how that is. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. An all-female sect is worshipping Vladimir Putin as Paul the Apostle. Vladimir Putin has become the object of veneration for a bizarre Russian all-female sect whose followers believe that the tough-talking prime minister is a reincarnation of the early Christian missionary Paul the Apostle. Members of the sect that has sprung up in a Russian village some 250 miles southeast of Moscow believe that the 58-year-old macho Russian is on a special mission from God. According to the Bible, Paul the Apostle was a military commander at first and an evil persecutor of Christians before he started spreading the Christian gospel, said the founder, who styles herself Mother Fotina. In his days in the KGB, Putin also did some rather unrighteous things. But once he became president, he was imbued by the Holy Spirit. And just like Paul the Apostle, he started wisely leading his flock. It's hard for him now, but he is fulfilling his heroic deed as an apostle. Reports from the sect's headquarters, close to the town of Nizhny Novgorod, says that its members are all women who dress like nuns and pray for Mr. Putin's success in front of traditional Russian Orthodox Church icons. Followers are reportedly encouraged to sing upbeat patriotic Soviet songs at services rather than hymns. According to local media, Mother Fotina's real name is Svetlana Frolova. It's interesting for me just because people truly do believe in reincarnation. But how along the lines do you see? I mean, there's been a lot of people in this world that have been a real militaristic type of person that have eventually turned to the Bible and to Christianity and have changed their ways. You know, why is it that Vladimir Putin is the one that they chose? Is it simply because he's the one that leads these people and the people look at him as a true leader, you know, as someone who can take them to the place where they want to be? I don't know. I just found it to be fascinating and interesting that even to this day, people think that there are reincarnations of apostles from the Bible. It's fascinating. It really is. It's just fascinating. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next thing that I wanted to take a look at, which is a really odd article, which I didn't really know what to make of it, but according to WhatDoesItMean.com, an alien attack left 500 dead in Texas as a UFO fleet nears Earth. A shocking report prepared by the Federal Space Agency, or FKA, or RKA, for Prime Minister Putin states that one of the United States' most important space facilities, located in Fort Worth, Texas, was attacked this past week, which was somewhere in the area of about the middle of May. It was attacked by alien forces intent on destroying Vimana technology transported there after its discovery by U.S. troops in Afghanistan. And as they had previously reported in December of 2010, world leaders had flocked to Afghanistan after a mysterious time well was discovered. According to the report, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA's Aviation Systems Division, located on a remote section of the giant Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport and responsible for engineering the software needed to control the aircraft over North America, suffered a nearly half-hour-long sustained attack resulting in the deaths of over 500 U.S. military and space contractors working on the Vimana technology. Most incredible to note about this alien attack upon the U.S. was that it was videotaped, but quickly explained away by America's propaganda media as being nothing more than transformer explosions caused by lightning. Now, this did make it into the news here as far as the transformer explosions go, but, I mean, who's to say what it was? I mean, personally, I think it was the transformers exploding. But am I being brainwashed by the propaganda here in the media in the United States? I don't know. Personally, I don't think so, but you never know. I mean, how could you say that 500 people died, but yet they didn't show any reports of that many deaths on any of the military sites that I ever go to, and I go to quite a few of them. I never heard anything about this, but then again, would you hear anything about it? You probably wouldn't. Anyway, there's a lot more to this article here that you can go and take a look at. There are three videos there that you can actually see of the strange lights, this alien attack or transformer explosions. You can actually go and see it. There's also a video here of what is supposedly a UFO that's been captured on a camera in Fort Worth. There's also supposedly a video here. Well, it's not supposedly a video. It actually is a video, but it's of a supposed armada above Earth, according to a NASA feed. is it? I don't know. There's a lot of space junk out there. As far as I know, last I heard, there was about 9,000 different objects going around the Earth that's more or less just considered to be space junk. But it's an interesting article. If anybody knows anything else about whether or not 500 military and space contractors died in Fort Worth on that date, let me know. I'd love to know more about it. But the next thing I wanted to take a look at is something that I just found to be rather interesting. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has accused Western countries of plotting to cause drought in Iran by using high-tech equipment to drain the clouds of raindrops. Moments after the Iranian president made the startling claim at the inauguration of a dam in Central Province, it started to rain. Western irony at its best. Western countries have designed plans to cause drought in certain areas of the world, including Iran, said Ahmadinejad in the city of Arak in Markazi Province. According to the reports on climate, whose accuracy has been verified, European countries are using special equipment to force clouds to dump water on their continent, said Ahmadinejad. By doing so, they prevent rain clouds from reaching regional countries, including Iran. Mr. Ahmadinejad also recalled an article by a Western politician whom he did not identify in which droughts in some regions spanning from Turkey and Iran to east of Asia are predicted for the next 30 years. But by saying that, does that really actually mean that they're trying to keep rain from there, or does that just mean that they're predicting what the weather is? I mean, they do that all the time. Iranian leaders claim on a daily basis that Western countries, led by arch foe United States, devise plots to undermine the Islamic Republic and to impede its economic and scientific development. They also accuse world powers of colluding against Iran's national unity, independence, political establishment, culture, as well as international relations. I just want to know whether or not it's actually possible. You know, is HAARP out there? Is there some kind of technology that is capable of making it rain in certain places and making it have a drought in other places? I mean, if you look at the world, the weather in one half of the world affects the weather in another part of the world. So you would really essentially have to be affecting weather everywhere across the planet in order just to affect one region of the world, unless it's such a small region that it doesn't really affect one major airflow. I mean, you do have the jet streams, the Gulf streams, the air that moves all around the world, so you would have to essentially mess with all of the weather to mess with one area. So is it something that we're doing that is messing with the air, the weather, the rain, the climate in Iran? Are we messing with their weather? If so, I would love to know about it. I would love to see what actually goes on with this and whether or not it's actually true. All right, well, this next thing I want to take a look at is just something that I personally thought was just straight badass. It's called the Knight XV. Conquest Vehicle Incorporated's flagship, the Knight XV, defines the future of the ultra-luxurious, handcrafted, fully armored SUV. This one-of-a-kind V10 6.8-liter biofuel-powered SUV was inspired by military vehicle designs and features security appointments that are unrivaled in any SUV in the marketplace. The production of the XV will be limited to 100 vehicles. If I had the money, I would buy this thing in a heartbeat, in half a heartbeat. It's quite a massive vehicle and makes the Hummer look small. It really does. It makes the Hummer look small. There's a picture here that you can go and take a look at. There's pictures of it all over the place, but there's one picture here where they compare it to the H2. Absolutely makes the H2 look like a Mini Cooper. It is just crazy how big this vehicle is, and it is just badassery all the way around, and I want one. Now, it doesn't say how much it costs, which really doesn't surprise me one single bit, just simply for the fact that if you have to ask how much it is, you can't afford it. You know, personally, if I had the money, I would buy it. This vehicle is just badass. What kind of gas mileage does it get? I don't know. Is it legal to drive in a lot of countries? I don't know. Do I know that it's a really cool vehicle and want to drive one? Absolutely. But I want you guys to go and take a look at it. It's courtesy of conquestvehicles.com/knight-xv.html. You can go and take a look at it. I'll provide a link up to it so you can go there. You can just go to the13skulls.com, look for the link for the Knight XV and the zombie-proof vehicle, because this would be a zombie-proof vehicle. You could just sit in and get to you. You could run them over. and you wouldn't have any problems with it whatsoever. Like I said, it makes the H2, the Hummer, look small. It's quite a great thing. You guys, we're going to take one last break here. When we get back, we'll be taking a look at how an Italian seismologist was charged with manslaughter for not predicting a quake. We're also going to be taking a look at high-quality footage of the JFK assassination. We're also going to be taking a look at a 700-foot-long space station that's supposedly on Mars. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, everybody. I'm James.
And I'm Tim, and we are the hosts of Taste Like Burning, which, interestingly enough, has nothing at all to do with cooking.
Yeah, we're not a cooking podcast, but what we do talk about is spicy and delicious.
That's right, James. No topic is off limits, and I, for one, try not to think before I speak.
Find us on iTunes or go to the show's website, tastelikeburning.libsyn.com, to subscribe.
And might I just add, you are looking and or smelling amazing today, listener.
Aliens and humans alike wanted to stop him at any cost, kill him if possible, destroy his quest for glory. He marshaled his forces and unified all the races under his violent leadership. They fought as one, left their blood on the field of battle, but persevered and conquered. He led his comrades to victory time and time again. And now he's back for his second season. Quarterback Quentin Barnes returns for his sophomore effort with the INF Krakens in The Starter, book two of the Galactic Football League series written by New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. The sequel to The Rookie, The Starter is a sci-fi sports gangland mashup described as Any Given Sunday meets The Godfather meets Star Wars. Available in all ebook formats as a limited edition hardcover, as unabridged downloadable audiobook, or as a free podcast at scottsigler.com/GFL.
Hey there, fiends. Tomb Dragomir here from Reborn Radio. Hey, 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 ho. When you're finished checking out the 13 Skulls show, why don't you slide on down the dial? Check out Rumorg Radio, the world's original all-horror broadcast. We've got celebrity interviews, terror tunes, news, reviews, and tons more, too. That's Rumorg Radio at RumorgRadio.com. Rumorg Radio.
Hey, ho, have you heard about a show called Rumorg?
Radio for ghouls, not radio for chones.
Orally stunning.
Until this blessing, murderous, no mercy for the dead.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of FoxNews.com. Apparently, an Italian seismologist has been charged with manslaughter for not predicting an earthquake. Italian government officials have accused the country's top seismologist of manslaughter after failing to predict a natural disaster that struck Italy in 2009, an earthquake that killed 308 people. A shocked spokesperson for the U.S. Geological Survey, or USGS, likened the accusations to a witch hunt. It has a medieval flavor to it, like witches are being put on trial, said the spokesperson on Fox News. Enzo Boschi, the president of Italy's National Institute of Geophysics and Volcanology, or INGV, will face trial along with six other scientists and technicians after failing to predict the quake. Joe Vidal, a Washington State seismologist and professor of the University of Washington, agreed that earthquake forecasting is simply impossible. "We're not able to predict earthquakes very well at all," he said. "One problem is we don't know how much stress it takes to break a fault. Second, we don't know how much stress is down there. All we can do is measure how the ground is deforming. Not knowing either of these factors makes it impossible and pretty tough to figure out when stresses will get to the point of rupture in an earth-shaking quake." The seven scientists who were placed under investigation almost a year ago, according to a news story on the website of the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences, or AAAS, the world's largest general science society and a leading voice for the interests of scientists worldwide. Alan Leshner, chief executive of AAAS, said his group wrote a letter to the Italian government last year, clearly to no avail. "The case will have a chilling effect on scientists," he said. "Whoever made these accusations misunderstands the nature of science, the nature of discipline, and how difficult it is to predict anything with the surety they expect. It reflects a lack of understanding about what science can and can't do," he said. "And frankly, it will have an effect of intimidating scientists. This just feels like either scapegoating or an attempt to intimidate the community. This just seems really inappropriate," he said. Judge Giuseppe Romano Gargarella said that the seven defendants had supplied imprecise, incomplete, and contradictory information in a press conference following a meeting held by the committee 6 days before the quake. "In doing so, they thwarted the activities designed to protect the people," said the judge. Boschi's lawyer, Marcello Melandri, has been taking the news badly, reported the AAAS story. He was particularly stunned because, despite the near impossibility of predicting earthquakes, Boschi had been indicating that a large earthquake would be coming, though he did not say when. Melandri told the AAAS that Boschi never thought to reassure the population of the city that there was no threat. On the contrary, the INGV head made it clear that at some point it is probable that there will be a big quake. You know, it really fascinates me that just because you say that you don't know exactly when it's going to happen, that they're going to charge you with manslaughter. I mean, come on. Earthquakes happen all the time, and they happen unexpectedly. If we could prevent an earthquake, or at least let people know when one was going to happen, no one would ever die from it. So how can you really hold this person, this Boschi guy, how can you really hold him accountable for the earthquake itself? He didn't cause it. Yeah, he may have made a judgment on that it was actually going to happen, but he didn't say that it was actually going to happen on the day that it happened. He said he didn't know when it was going to happen. I can say that. An earthquake's going to hit California eventually. I don't know when, but eventually it's going to happen because there's a fault there. Anywhere that there's a fault, it's going to happen. So why it is that they're charging this guy is just simply beyond me. I really don't know. It's like charging a weatherman here in the United States, charging him for murder because of a tornado that struck a town and people died from it. To me, it's just absolutely asinine. But let's go ahead and move on to an article which I found to be rather disturbing. It's courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. A teenager who dressed in dark clothing and stabbed her mother 5 times as she slept has walked free from court after claiming she was possessed by the spirit of her dead grandmother. Lorraine Mbulawa, who's 19, escaped jail after Judge Mr. Justice Keith accepted that the girl had strong beliefs in witchcraft and evil that she was acting upon what she was told to do by spirits. The student was cleared of the charge of attempted murder during a trial earlier this year, but was convicted of a lesser charge of unlawful wounding. The court heard how all of her family, including her mother, believe in the occult and did not blame her for what she had done. In delivering the verdict, Justice Keith told Leeds Crown Court she believed spirits can enter her body and make you do things that otherwise you would not have done. Her beliefs could make her think she was possessed by evil spirits at the time. He also said, in convicting Lorraine of unlawful wounding, the jury must be treated as having rejected her claim of being in a dissociative state. The jury treated Lorraine as if she knew what she was doing at the time of the attack, which I would think if she knew what she was doing and the jury was treating her as if she did, then why didn't you convict her of murder? She murdered her own mother. Anyway, her mother woke during the attack, believing it was a burglar, and wrestled a knife from her assailant only to discover it was her daughter. The girl, who comes from Zimbabwe, claimed to have been acting on the orders of her dead paternal grandmother. Her father died some years ago, and following her arrest, she told police that she planned to kill herself after killing her mother. Giving evidence in court about what happened that night, she said, "I had a dream that seemed a bit real. It was my grandma and my dad's youngest sister, Charlotte, like they were right at the foot of my bed. My grandmother said, my mother was responsible for the death of my father, and I had to do the honorable thing to my father by killing my mother." During the two-week trial, Mrs. Imbulawa, who's 43, gave evidence that believed her daughter's actions were committed during a trance of some kind. She said she believed in witchcraft and evil spirits and said her Christian daughter did not seem herself during the incident. Her only sentence was to complete 120 hours of unpaid work, and she must attend supervision that will help her understand her beliefs so she could fight any urges that tell her to commit any crimes in the future. Very strange indeed. I don't understand why it is that you got off with what you got off with. Now, does the girl actually believe that this is the case? Possibly. Maybe she did believe that her grandmother told her to come kill her mother, and maybe she did. Maybe that was what it was. Maybe she believed that's actually what she had to do. Can you convict her of murder at that point? I mean, yes, more manslaughter than anything else, or, you know, voluntary homicide, something along those lines, but I don't really understand why it is that she wasn't convicted of this, seeing as how she actually did it. The only thing that she's got to do, you know, is 120 hours worth of work and basically go to some counseling. I don't really understand it. I just found it to be rather disturbing that this girl murdered her mother, said that she was possessed, and walked free from court. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is just another rather disturbing thing. It's courtesy of NYDailyNews.com. A California woman was spotted pushing a trash can full of human body parts down the street and was arrested for homicide. Carmen Montenegro, who's 51, of San Bernardino, California, was spotted with a macabre container about 2:30 in the afternoon and was nabbed by police, who were tipped off to her bizarre activities. Officers stopped her leaving the location, and in the trash can we found human remains, said Detective Jeff Crittenden. The contents of the trash can are being investigated by the coroner's office, but police believe it is a homicide and that there is only one body. They are still working to clarify the connection between the woman and the remains to identify the victim. Crittenden told reporters he did not have much information about Montenegro, but she is a relative of the homeowner whose house she was spotted wheeling the body away from. One neighbor's resident's daughter told the news reporter that she is Montenegro's cousin, and the woman came to the home for help disposing the body. Other residents said Montenegro's mother lives in the home and that Montenegro herself lived there sporadically for over a decade. The body is believed to have been dug up from the yard of the house where Montenegro was first spotted. Interesting, man. I mean, did you kill someone and then take all of their pension money and their retirement money and then bury them in the backyard and then just go crazy and decide, why would you be wheeling a body in a trash can around town knowing that you would get caught? I don't understand why people do the things they do. You know, it's a fascinating, crazy, weird, disturbingly wonderful world we live in. But at the same time, you look at something like this and you really do look at the disturbing part of it and say that, yeah, there are some very, very disturbed people out there. Very crazy. It's just really, really wild. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of LiveLeak.com. I've become rather addicted to LiveLeak.com. They've got a lot of great videos on there. I'll post a link up to this one. It's apparently high quality footage of the JFK assassination that is saying the government was behind the Kennedy assassination and that it was caught on film. Obviously, this is the Zapruder film. President Kennedy was apparently killed by the driver of his own limo, according to this video. They say here that get a hold of something solid because this will blow your flipping mind. Now JFK's fatal bullet wound was from point-blank range, and the shooter is seen right on film. Now, if you remember, the fatal shot that really took off Kennedy's head was one that made his head go back and to the left. Now, when you watch this video, it will go slow motion through it, and it does appear that the driver holds something up next to his own head as if he's looking back to point the gun backwards. And right when he does that is when that shot happens, is when Kennedy, you know, when he's shot in the head and his head goes back, it seems to look as if Kennedy did get shot by the driver of the limo. The only thing that I can say that doesn't really work with this is when it looks like the bullet would have had to have been fired, the gun does not move. It doesn't recoil. It doesn't go anywhere. For me, I don't believe that the driver really did it. It appears that way, but I don't think he did just because the gun doesn't recoil. I've shot a lot of guns in my life. I love guns. I've shot everything. I mean, unless it wouldn't have been a 22. A 22 is a small, teeny little rifle bullet that isn't big enough to take off that much of the head when the person is shot. Now, I just want to warn you guys that this is a graphic video and it actually does show the moment when Kennedy gets shot in the head. It is graphic. But just watch the video. Draw the conclusions for yourself. If you believe it happened, you believe it happened. If you don't believe it happened, you don't believe it happened. Personally, I don't know. I mean, it looks as if it possibly could be, but seeing as how the gun doesn't recoil, I kind of had to call just a, you know, not BS on this, but just call it a little bit of a coincidence. Maybe the guy was pointing backwards towards the building. I don't know, but just watch and take a look and let me know what you think. Now, the next thing I wanted to take a look at is something really actually that I just wanted to point you guys in the direction of. It's miragrant.com. It's the first book called Feed of a trilogy of zombie books. It looks to be really good. I haven't read it yet. I haven't even looked over it yet. I just found it the other day, and I want you guys to go and take a look at it. If you're a zombie fan, go check it out. It's miragrant.com. That's miragrant.com. And you can go and take a look at this. And there, like I said, it's a trilogy coming out. You can go and take a look at Newsflesh, the trilogy. The year was 2014. We had cured cancer. We had beaten the common cold. But in doing so, we created something new, something terrible that no one could stop. The infection spread, a man-made virus taking over bodies and minds, filling them with one unstoppable command, feed. It looks to be really good. The first book is called Feed. The second book is called Deadline. And the third book is called Blackout. Feed is already out there. You can go and take a look at it. You can actually get it on Amazon. But Deadline is set to be released in the US and the UK in May of 2011, which I haven't seen yet. And Blackout is set to be released in 2012. Now, it's just an interesting book, interesting website. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. If anybody's read it, let me know. I'd love to hear what you think of this before I go and buy it. But anyway, you guys just go take a look at it and let me know what you think. Now, the last thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of LiveLeak.com again. And supposedly someone has found a 700-foot-long space station on Mars. The discovery was made by David Martins in 2011. The structure is apparently 700 feet by 150 feet, and it's colored white with blue and red stripes against the red Martian soil. The coordinates are here, so you can go and take a look at it yourself. If you wanted to get onto Google Mars, I believe, or whatever it is, that Google program that you can go and take a look at this. But anyway, you can watch this. It shows the person with the screen on his computer up, and he zooms in on Mars, and you see this weird red, white, and blue colored thing there on the surface of Mars. Is it a natural formation? I don't know. Is it because the graininess of the video and the graininess of the pictures doesn't allow for you to really see what it is that it's making you think that it's red, white, and blue? You know, the colors of the United States are red, white, and blue, so it wouldn't surprise me if they did make something there that was that were, you know, colored that way. But I don't really know what to make of this because it's so grainy you can't really tell. I just thought it was interesting because this is the first time I've heard of this. I haven't seen this before. You can go to mysteryhistory.tv and check out more of it. But this video, I'll let you guys know about, you know, whenever I get a chance to check it out myself, I'll let you know. But if anybody else has Google Mars, I believe, on their computer, go check out these coordinates and check it out and let me know what you think. If, you know, hopefully one of these days we can have a clearer image of what it is. It could just be an, you know, one of those natural phenomena like the face on Mars, where it looks like it is something that it's not. But anyway, just because of the shading and everything, I just thought it was interesting. You guys and gals, I really appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. I want to, you know, just give a big thank you to everybody. You guys have made this show so much better because of your support. And even though it's been a really long time since the last show came out, you're still there and it means a lot to me. But we're going to go ahead and take one last little break here. When we get back, we'll close out the show. All right, guys and gals, since it is the end of the show, let's go ahead and get the formalities buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you have an experience or feedback, you can email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com, or you can call me at 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. I'll post a link up to everything that you heard about in the show. If you like the music in this show, some of it will be courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at www.iotaalliance.com, or some of the music might be courtesy of Mevio's Music Alley. Check them out at music.mevio.com. The sound effects that have been, are being, and will be used in the show are courtesy of the Freesound Project at freesound.org. If you have a podcast, radio show, book, or anything like that, and you want to swap promos, just let me know. Email me, and we'll do that. If you want a button or magnet, email me with your name and an address to ship to, and I will get one out to you ASAP. Again, I will post up links to everything you heard about in the show notes and a lot of stuff that you didn't hear about in the show. So you guys go check them out. There's going to be a lot there for you. But again, I hope you guys are having a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this. Take care, and I will talk to you guys again on another day.
If you can bring those ones inside, if you're too blind to recognize, rocking the sound with the best regards. You can't judge me for having the rights. We'll be right back.